there, and welcome back to another episode of the Wonner Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Okay, and today we are talking about Chloe Zhao's film, Hamnet. If you want our spoiler-free thoughts, that's already on our page with our Hamnet First Thoughts video. You can go check that out on the page. But we are going to be getting into spoilers in this edition of the show. So if you have not seen the movie, this one might not be for you. We have a spoiler-free edition over on the page.
Yeah, there's not, you know, honestly, there's not too many spoilers. And like you said in your review, the trailer is just a summation of the movie, honestly.
Which is my biggest problem with the movie, which is not, it's not actually the movie's fault.
No.
It's the studio or whoever's decision it was to cut a trailer that was literally just like what if we showed you a 2 minute long cut of the film?
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's even like in sequence, the trailer is like,
for
the most part, it's like, here are the events. Here are the story beats of the film.
Yeah.
and
And in defense of the trailer editor, myself being a trailer editor as well, this movie, I am okay with it because, first of all, the trailer is also very amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very good. It does give you an overview of the movie, but you're also missing the journey that they go on.
Yeah.
Right. Like our job as a trailer editor is to get people interested in the movie, get butts in the seats, right? Like, no matter what, sometimes they spoil movies, which is really frustrating, but there's also numbers that show, there's statistics that show people actually sometimes like it when the movie is spoiled, so they know what to expect. So sometimes that's why they do that or whatever. But I mean, this movie, it is the movie as far as plot wise and sequence wise, but you still miss out on that catharsis, that emotional, you know, payoff that happens at the end of the movie. Even though we see what happens, you really don't get the full effect of it unless you watch the movie. So I agree with you. It is unfortunate that they just showed the whole, because I was thinking that too. I was like, this is just the trailer. Like, this is, we're just watching the trailer. Like, I'm surprised they showed the end on Hamnet, but you know.
I kept thinking that like the movie was going to surprise me narratively in some way and like have a turn that I was like, oh, I didn't think that's what would happen. Like, there's a moment, I mean, we're just getting into spoilers and it's all right for us to say this, but there's a bit there. Hamnet has a twin. Hamnet is the child of William Shakespeare and I guess who we would call today Anne Hathaway, his wife.
Right.
But in the movie, her name is Agnes, which is spelled A-G-N-E-S. This is kind of a big thing about this movie too. The first thing we see in the film is that, because I think a lot of people, when they see the trailer for this, they go, hold on. So you're telling me William Shakespeare had a son named Hamnet, and then he wrote a play called Hamlet?
Yeah.
Like, why would he make the shift? And the first thing we see in this movie is that in the old English, the name Hamnet and Hamlet were used interchangeably, which seems to us weird today, but also like we don't even use the name Hamlet anymore.
No,
like
no.
We don't, that's not a name that we call anyone anymore. And
it's kind of like John and Jack, right?
I thought the exact same thing. Yeah. Like how we go, like, how is John Jack or how is Bill Will? Bill and Will are closer, but there's still, you're changing one letter and it's definitely, and that's Hamnet, Hamlet, changing one letter. But there are a lot of things about the old English. If you read actual first folio texts of Shakespeare's writing, there are a lot of words that you go like, what is that word? And then someone has to explain to you, oh, that word is pronounced like this. And it's just like, this is a bad example because I can't think of one off the top of my head, but it's like apple. Obviously, apple was spelled the same back then, but like you'd see a word that would be spelled not like that. You'd go, what is that? And they've translated a lot of those words into the modern context. So even though her name is spelled Agnes, it's pronounced Agnes, Anne for short.
And I guess someone commented about this because even her dad referred to her in his will as Agnes. Mm-hmm. Even though her name is Anne Hathaway. So it's just kind of an old English Hamnet, Hamlet. It's definitely something that you have to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they assumed or that's what they decided to call her. And this is kind of important to know, even though we know that William Shakespeare had a son who died when he was 11, they have no idea how he died. They have no idea what he died of. They have no idea if his death is actually connected to the play Hamlet. There's just a lot of inference. So this is kind of like a best guess. Now, that doesn't mean that this isn't like, you know, I think this was great, a great movie, but it's also not factually accurate, even though maybe this is what happened. But
think about the way that William Shakespeare wrote,
right,
which is he would do sometimes histories. You know, you would write a play about Henry V, and there would be multiple parts, or King Richard, or Julius Caesar. And he's dramatizing events that are loosely based on things that were said to have happened. But he's also just, he's putting in themes and things that he wants to be relatable to. It's not necessarily about how historically accurate is this. So if an audience is, if people are wondering like, well, why tell the story at all if you're just making it up? It's like, well, because it's a story about grief. It's a story about love. It's a story about the power of storytelling. And I think that this film is an argument for the power of live storytelling, shared communal experiences with stories.
Right.
And so whether or not this is literally what happened with William Shakespeare and Anne Hathaway and their son, Hamnet.
Yeah.
Is kind of irrelevant because we don't even know if William Shakespeare actually wrote these plays. Like that is still a matter of historical contention. Like and so it doesn't really, that's not, you know, like, I think people kind of go into it going like, did this really happen? And it's like, did this movie that you're watching happen exactly the way that Chloe Zhao has written it with this person who wrote the book? Right. What's the woman who wrote the book?
Maggie O'Farrell, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Maggie O'Farrell. Yeah.
Most likely not. Like, most likely there is a good amount of artistic license being taken these.
Yeah.
With these, you know. But what I was going to say at up front is, when, you know, watching the trailer, that's what you get. The trailer's like, this is a story of how William Shakespeare met and fell in love with Anne Hathaway. They had kids. One of them died in their grief. And in his, they grieved separate ways. And in his grief, he wrote the play Hamlet. And it was a healing experience for them.
Yes.
You see all of that in the trailer.
Yes.
But I thought for a second there, Hamnet has a twin sister. And I did not know that. And when they're born, Hamnet is, he comes out first and he's healthy, and his twin sister comes out second and she's appears to be stillborn, and and the midwives that are helping Jesse Buckley give birth are trying to take the baby away, but she refuses and she's like, I'm gonna stay with my baby. And then she sort of blesses her with this like, you will live blessing,
right?
And that baby lives. And then later on in the film, when the children take ill, it's always been Hamnet's twin sister who's the one who struggles more, and she gets sick first. And I thought for a minute, oh, maybe the thing that the trailer was misleading all of us on is that it's not Hamnet who dies, it's his sister who dies, similar to like Hamlet's sister Ophelia, you know, or not sister Ophelia, his love interest. It's Hamlet's mother, but but his love interest Ophelia. But maybe it's that this is a story about how William Shakespeare wrote a play for his grieving son, also Hamlet, Hamnet, who is like trying to deal with like understanding death, because Hamlet in the play is a character who is grieving.
Yes.
He is a character whose father has been killed, and who, like, he is a character who is dealing with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune of, you know, all the, so I was like, oh, maybe that's the twist here. And then no, it turns out it's just what is shown in the trailer.
It is. But it's really, I mean, both the trailer's great, but this movie also, man, it really hits you. It hits you in all the right ways.
It packs a punch.
It does.
I think if you're open to it, it hits hard.
Yeah. And I think too, so I said this in my first thoughts, knowing what to expect is going to be helpful, because my parents saw it and they didn't love it until the end of the film. Like once Hamnet becomes ill, That seems to be when they picked it up, because this is the thing, like, this movie is not, you know, it's not really mainstream. It's not mainstream, but it's very, Chloe Zhao is very emotionally driven, especially for this film. Like, it follows a pattern and it follows their lives, but it's not one beat after the other. It just kind of like follows the emotions of the character. So the first, you know, when it opens really with Shakespeare and Agnes meeting and like having a kind of a strange meeting. And then like the first hour, or like even longer than an hour, is their whole relationship,
mm-hmm.
which I was surprised by, like, oh, this is taking a long time, even just to get to the kids.
Right.
But I liked that because it's setting up who these characters are, right? Like, Agnes is really, you know, her mother had died, we find out, and she's kind of like I liked this throughout the whole part of the movie, but everybody calls her a witch.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very connected to nature, and she's very like, she's kind of like a healer.
The first shot of the film is her lying by herself in the woods next to this cave. It's also the first shot of the trailer. Which again, it's like the trailer is literally like And I it's like I want to make it clear, I'm not judging this film because the trailer was too close to it. It's a good movie. And it's just one of those things where I'm like, man, I wish there was a way to cut it. Because I agree with you also that the trailer was very effective and made me want to see the movie. So it did what it needed to do, but it's like, I wish there was a way to cut this trailer that allowed me to have an experience with the film there was a little more like that caught me off guard a little bit more, that left a little,
totally valid.
But I like that too. I love that both William and Agnes are sort of outcasts or like, in their own regard, that William is kind of seen as a guy, like the man's responsibility is to figure out how are you going to be a provider and how are you going to be I also kind of like this idea that like his father is wearing this like ruffled collar that he's so often pictured in it, which seems so aristocratic, you know, seems so like buttoned up, but Shakespeare wears this sort of unbuttoned tunic and he's much more of a free spirit. Mm-hmm. And his father looks more like the portraits of William Shakespeare than he ever does at any point in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of a disappointment to his dad because he wants to write poetry and wants to write, you know, and I think
when he's working off his dad's debts, which I found interesting too. Yeah.
By teaching Latin.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, I did like their courtship. I also wanted to like what you talked about with Chloe Zhao being a very emotional, director. Mm-hmm. This is like, an opinion that I have, a hot take, if you will, that gets me into a lot of trouble with people is that anytime I've said this on my channels, like in any video, I've mentioned this several times over the years, but like, I kind of think personally that the take that William Shakespeare is just the greatest writer of all time and no one's ever going to do it better and that's it, that's the end all being, that's the end all be all of writing, I find kind of tedious and dishonest. I think even the people who say that, I'm like, I don't believe you. Like, I think of that, even the companies in the world that produce the most Shakespeare, that are like constantly doing Shakespeare, they usually redact like at least a third of the script when they produce these pieces, like they literally go through and edit them heavily because they're like, okay, if we're going to present this to a modern audience, it's like a 5-hour script. And we need to find a 2 to 2.5 hour cut, if not a 90-minute cut. And I'm just kind of like, guys, there's a reason why they do that. And it's because at the time, writing didn't really have like our, what's one of the biggest writing rules in modern screenplay writing, if you had
show don't tell.
You nailed it. And that didn't really exist when the only piece of entertainment available was to go watch players do a story in you know, the Globe Theater. When there wasn't TV, when there wasn't TikTok, so people were down to stand and watch 5 hours of a drama. And it was almost more like you were listening to actors recite prose, like they were reading a book to you, than it was like watching a movie or watching a TV show.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, every character in a Shakespeare play, when they feel some kind of way about something that happens, they turn to the audience and they do a 3-page speech about how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And then they tell you what they're going to do next based on how they're feeling. Then they go do it. And then they turn to the audience and tell you how they feel about the thing they just told you they were going to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, none of that exists in modern writing. We try to communicate all of that through almost no dialogue, as little dialogue as possible.
Yeah.
And this is definitely a screenplay that, like, is the antithesis of the way Shakespeare wrote. It's like, as little speaking as possible.
Yeah.
You know, there's very little, it's very light. I mean, even when Anya's and Will first meet, he like walks up to her, asks her her name. She says, "I'm not going to tell you." They have this like nonverbal exchange where they're just sort of looking into each other's eyes and flirting without really saying much. And then they kiss.
Well, and he's like, you'll tell me after I kiss you. Right.
Yeah,
like
that's right.
And then they do. And I was like, wow, this is weird. But it was a great scene. But yeah, it's and I'm really glad that you say that, because here's the thing. Like, I really have not liked Shakespeare for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I got kicked out of class one time at Albion because I was like, the teacher was like, "Oh, we're going to have Shakespeare." And I was like, "Oh," and she was fed up. She's like, "Get out now." So I had to go out of class. And I was like, oh, sorry. But lately, like, so I went and saw Hamlet, and I started watching some Hamlets. Like, I started watching the Mel Gibson version. I read up on Hamlet just because I really haven't looked into Shakespeare. Now, Shakespeare is obviously amazing. You can't say that he's not good at what he does. But I agree, it's very hard. It's very hard because it's so different than what it is now. It's exactly opposite as it is now. It's like, no, don't. You shouldn't say how you feel. Like, if you're writing a screenplay, you shouldn't say how the character feels. That's just bad writing.
A character never just looks at the audience and goes, "I'm really upset about this.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to cope with it. What should I do? Should I kill the person who made me upset, or should I kill myself because I'm so drowned?" It's like,
exactly.
It just doesn't happen.
No. And so, like, so the way that but that's kind of how it was back then. So you have to respect how he did things, but he's so long-winded. Like, it's more that's the style. It's like, look how well I can write this prose and how eloquently I can express how I'm feeling, which is really hard for me to connect to, because I'm a very simple person. So like, when Hamlet is speaking, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to use so much brain power just to understand what he's saying. And that's good for Shakespeare, but it's really not how things are done now.
Well, and listen, that's what I mean when I just say I think the impressive thing about Shakespeare is how well it holds up 400 years later.
Yes.
How is seeing all of these turns, every once in a while you'll be reading Shakespeare or seeing a Shakespeare play, and they'll say like a turn of phrase that you're like, that turn of phrase existed 400 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you'll look it up and realize like he invented that turn of phrase.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's crazy that like the first time anyone said that was in this play, apparently.
Yeah.
And like or at least he's known for popularizing that turn of phrase. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot. And so it's not that so don't get me wrong. It's not that Shakespeare's not impressive.
Right.
It's not that the language doesn't have moments that are beautiful and that echo through time and themes that have managed to remain relevant for a very long time. It's not that. It's just that, like, I think if most people are being honest, the best Shakespeare they've ever seen in their lives, like if they saw like an amazing production of King Lear at the Royal Shakespearean Company, or an amazing production of As You Like It or something. Mm-hmm. The best productions they've ever seen in their lives were good because they could understand like 60% of it.
And
the actors were like the best actors in the world.
Yeah.
And even then it's like, I bet if you had your choice between watching that for the rest of your life or watching like an Aaron Sorkin show, you'd choose an Aaron Sorkin. Like,
I agree. Yeah.
You know, just because modern writers are going to write your specific experience as a child of the 20th or 21st century much more accurately. Yeah. And they're going to, because of the advent of cinema and the close-up and the ability to be quiet and the ability to say a lot with visual imagery.
Yes.
We've just developed different modes of communicating these things. And we don't need a character to go on a 5-minute long speech to explain what we can see it in a look. Yep. And you see that in that's the interesting thing about this film is like most of it is communicated through facial expression.
Yeah. And you know, it's very much show, don't tell.
Yeah.
And Chloe Zhao does an amazing job of that because it is all, and she's leaving everything up to interpretation, which I think is hard for a lot of people, which I understand, but like she'll have a scene and it's like, that's an odd scene. I'm not exactly sure what happened. Like when Shakespeare is leaving back to London after Hamnet has died, he, you know, Agnes and Agnes is really mad at him. And so he holds her and she gets really mad. And then she kind of stops for a second. And then she gets up and she's like, just leave, just go. And I was like, okay, I'm not exactly sure how I should have taken that scene. Like if it was a more mainstream movie, she would have cried. They would have had a moment and they would have come to some sort of resolve. But then in this movie, it's kind of left up to you, which I actually appreciate because it's emotional, you know, it's just kind of leaving it up for everybody. So this is all very much like your hand is not held through this movie.
Yeah, some of these emotional beats, like you're saying, because there are a lot of them, feel like Chloe Zhao allowed her actors to just sort of feel their way through these moments, and then they edited together sort of the pieces that worked best, and then it's kind of just a collection of vignettes that, again, we are taken through a linear narrative. It's linear, but we are just kind of shown these moments that aren't necessarily connected through dialogue. They're connected, like you said, through the emotional through line, which is very, I think, which, you know, you can really connect to, but also leads to my other nitpicky criticism of this film that I talked about in my spoiler-free thing, which is at times, because Chloe Zhao is just allowing her actors to just feel their way through these moments, at times it can feel a little bit, to me at least, emotionally indulgent or or like insistent on the importance and the, like sometimes it just felt like we're actors are like, because I'll tell you give an actor a chance to like just really emote and they're like chomping at the bit to go like, oh, let me sink my teeth into this. And sometimes there needs to be restraint, but this felt like a film where Chloe Zhao was like, I want you guys to just let it all out. I want it big. And I really was impressed by what Paul Mescal and Jesse Buckley were able to do here. But I would just say sometimes it felt like, because this movie is so dialogue light, it's really light on dialogue and it's so emotionally driven, it just felt like one really heavy emotional vignette after another.
Yeah.
And it felt like sometimes we were just kind of languishing in that feeling, which I know is also kind of the point of the film.
But
it felt a little maybe indulgent, possibly even manipulative of like shaking the audience and being like, feel, you know?
Yeah. I think the parts that it didn't work for me, because I see what you're saying. The parts that didn't really work for me in that respect is when Shakespeare started quoting Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And like, he's like, you know, to be or not to be, that is the question, you know, and Shakespeare almost seems like he really is about to commit suicide. And he recites that part of Hamlet. And I'm like, you know, I don't know if this works for me because it feels too indulgent. It also feels like this is where he, you know, and I'm like,
So did Olivia just
come up with it? Like I didn't love that, but maybe some people have different takes, but what did Olivia think?
She had that same exact thought in that same exact moment. Cause it's that, it's that biopic trope where like a person comes up with a very famous song and they, but the song rolls out of them fully formed. And you're like, that's not how writing goes. Like, you know, like one of my favorite examples, I didn't even see this movie, but it made me laugh just from the trailer. The trailer for Respect, the Aretha Franklin movie, had, had this, this part it, just in the trailer where, Aretha Franklin's like sitting at the piano and she's kind of like, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, tell me what it means to me. And then one of her friends comes over and goes, wow, that's really good, Ree. And then she goes, Ree. And I was like, no, no. I was like, no, that's not how that happened. That's not like that is not like calling her like Ree as short for Aretha and then being like, wait, yeah, and then say that. I just was like, that is not how that song was written. But so Olivia was kind of like, there's no way he just spoke the entire To Be or Not to Be monologue. Right. And that's how it was written. But my read was more like what you're saying, which is the script was already written. He was already in rehearsals for Hamlet. Mm-hmm. And he was deeply grieving the loss of his son. And he went to the doc and he recited that thing that he had already written, that he already knew by heart. Yeah. And so, but I still get what you're saying that like, it is like, it's one of those moments where it's like, I know that you guys want to bring the text into the movie somehow. And it, but it feels like one of those biopic moments where you're just kind of like, this feels like a stretch. Yeah.
And he does that a couple times and it just didn't work for me, you know, just like, no, okay. But that, these are, I see your nitpick. I think this is a nitpick for me as well. Just,
well, and even like even the moment where his kids, who, by the way, we need to talk about the kids in this movie at some point. I think the next thing we should talk about is just performances.
Yeah,
but there's a moment where the kids do the witch scene from Macbeth and and it's really cute, but they have it word perfect. And I'm like, would his kids know the exact text? Would they have every line memorized? And especially if like, these kids never go to London to watch the plays. Like when did they,
because
like, I know that like you have kids that watch the same movie over and over and over
again.
But it's like, even when you know the movie really well, do you know it word perfect? And the fact that his kids are able to do that entire scene word perfect, I'm like, maybe they do like an approximation of the scene and you know, but like they know it well enough, but the fact that the movie's like, well, we have to do this text perfectly.
Yeah.
But that is an adorable scene. And yeah, I think we should talk about, these kids, these performances. Yeah. I want to ask you something. So, what's his name? That played Jacoby Jupe.
Jacoby Jupe. Yeah.
Who is just fantastic in this movie.
I was blown away, dude. He was amazing.
Did this kid remind you of your boys at all?
Yeah, he remind. Yeah, I mean a little bit more of Harrison because my son, he's more blonde haired.
Yeah,
and he's a little bit younger than my older, but yeah, he kind of reminded me of my son. Yeah,
I was thinking when I was looking at that, I was like, I bet because you've got these little blonde boys.
Yeah,
and I just was like, I bet Kramer's gonna watch this and go like, oh, that's my boy. Like,
it got me there. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's such a cute. I mean, he's so cute, but also his performance is phenomenal.
And just especially what he had to do. Like he had to quote Shakespeare for a little bit, right? But then he has to like have this whole relationship with his sister that nobody else has because they're twins. Mm-hmm. And then he has to pretend to die, right? Mm-hmm. Like, which is like, and I believed it. Like, I was like, wow, it wasn't over the top like some kids could get into. And then he has to kind of work his way through the afterlife, right?
Yeah.
And I was totally blown away by this kid.
Yeah, me too. And the other kids were great too. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's doing fantastic work here. Obviously, though, the big talk is about Paul Mescal and Jesse Buckley.
Yeah.
Particularly Jesse Buckley. And do you think that there's anybody in your mind that would beat her right now for the
best actress? No, I mean, I'd have to look back and see, but I mean, this is she was pretty amazing. I mean, I think she would win it right now if I were to bet, you know.
I talked a little bit about how sometimes, because of the way Zhao has constructed this film, because of the way that she shot it, where she was letting Buckley and Mescal sort of feel their way through these moments, not necessarily sticking to the script, but just going with what comes up, it can feel a little indulgent. But also just, I look at the enormity of what Buckley was doing, because it's not just the grief sequences. There are like two different giving birth sequences from Jesse Buckley that are just brutal, like her performance in both of them is, it's just like, it's crazy. But then also her grief, her reaction when Hamnet dies in her arms was heartbreaking.
It was it was she did a great job. And I guess this I could be wrong, but I think I read something where it said this she'd been thinking about having kids in her own life, and this role really convinced her to have kids, which I thought was great, because it felt like she had kids, right? Like sometimes you could tell when actors are trying to act in a situation that maybe they haven't experienced. Not that they can't do well. I mean, that's what actors do. You have to put yourself in the mind. But I felt like she was, you know, genuinely was a mother, and she will be. So she did a great job. And she did a really great job overall with her kids, with the relationship between her and Paul Mescal. And I think the thing that I really, really liked about her performance as well is this kind of foresight that she has. They play with this throughout the movie, right? Like they're, she says something for, when she's having her kids and she's about to have her second one, you know, William is like, oh, it's two, right? You're going to have two. She's like, yeah, on my deathbed, there's going to be two kids with me. Mm-hmm. Just as that's what I feel. And then she has three. So then she's worried, you know, the whole movie, or not the whole movie. She's worried after that point that the daughter is going to die. And
she's also seen Hamnet grown up on, which is this other thing that was really beautiful. Cause she assumes it's the daughter because she's already seen a vision of Hamnet grown up on stage, which comes back in a really beautiful form.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it was one of the most emotionally sort of like gut punches of the film is understanding that the first time she sees Noah Jupe, is Jacoby Jupe Noah Jupe's little brother?
Yes. Which I really liked that they did that.
Yeah.
Because of the familial connection, and because they're setting up that, oh, she thought she saw Hamlet on stage.
She saw
this actor who in real life are brothers. So I like that little connection that they had. I thought that was because, she sees him on stage and she has this like thing. But the thing that I found amazing is like that stuff happens. So like Mitch and Riley. So I have identical twin brothers. My brothers who are identical twins. Mm-hmm. And one of them died when he was 21. And my mother always had a feeling her whole life right when she had my brothers that one of them wouldn't make it that long. She had this feeling her whole life that one of my twins isn't going to make it. She just didn't know. She just had that feeling. And I think she kind of always, you know, I don't know how she felt about all that, but she had that thought and she's had that. And then, you know, my brother died when he was 21 in a car accident. And she kind of just knew that it was going to happen. It's like sometimes you just see these. There's this mother's intuition that is very, very, very real. Mm-hmm. And I thought they portrayed that really well in this movie because they did it that way, right? They did. Yeah. They had her talk about it. And even with my wife, like, and I've had this a little bit. She's had it way more. But we have a daughter who has type 1 diabetes. And we just kind of have always thought, like, she's always been scared about it. Our three older kids, we were always worried, like we got to go get them checked out. They're drinking a lot, you know, or like there are certain signs that you can look for. And then with our youngest daughter, we caught it early because we've always been worried about it. And my wife
drinking water a lot.
Well, really thirsty or peeing a lot, like those.
Oh, sure. I was in my stupid head. I was just thinking, like, man, our 11-year-old sure is drinking a lot. He's really hitting the sauce.
We get a lot of water. Sorry, but yeah. Diabetes, that's one of the signs, right?
Yeah, it is.
You have to drink a lot and you have to pee a lot. And we saw that, took her in, and my wife, once she found out, she felt like she has diabetes, but everything will be okay. right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of always have felt that. So there's this mother's intuition that parents can have, right? And yeah. It just, the way that they portrayed it wasn't so over the top. It felt very natural. And it was something that I could relate to with my mom and with my wife having things like that. So I thought the way that they portray that, I loved it because it felt so good for the story. And she does, like in the middle of the movie, she says, "Oh, I see you." You know, she touches him right here or wherever, uh-huh. and she can see, and she touches Hamnet's hand, and she's like, "I see you on stage with your father." And when she said that, I was like, "Oh, wow, she's gonna see Noah Jude." Like, it worked really well.
I didn't even make that connection.
Oh, you didn't?
And okay. I'm glad I didn't, because then when that moment, even realizing it in that moment, like, oh, that's, oh, yeah. I was, you know, yeah. I like that aspect too. I'm glad you brought that up, and you're right that. And then, you know, and at the time it's like anyone who expresses anything like that, it's like, well, oh, you're a witch. You've got weird powers, you know, even though it's just this connection. Yeah. I've had that my whole life. My mom knows when I'm not doing well,
my mom does too. It's crazy. Yeah. She'll call me. I felt like I needed to call you. I'm like, wow. Oh yeah. I mean, I got to talk to you about this. You know?
Yeah. The timing's always right on.
Yeah. Yeah. So crazy.
And it's
a thing that you can't explain. It's a spiritual thing, and you don't have to be a mother. Some people just have it. Like, there's a connection between people, and some people are able to tap into that. And I think mothers just with their own kids are really able to tap into that, as we're talking about. So I thought the way they portrayed it was awesome, and it felt very natural. It didn't feel like they overdid it. You know, sometimes you can really like do it too much to make it feel like, no, that doesn't happen. Like, you know, to make them feel almost like they're supernatural, but really it's a very natural thing for a lot of people. So,
yeah. As far as Mescal's performance as Shakespeare, I liked how simple. I don't think he tried to, because again, I think this whole thing with William Shakespeare that we talked about with the text and with the writing, it almost has like this religious.
Yeah.
Like you talked about getting kicked out of class for scoffing at the idea of having, you know, that like there is almost this sacred regard for like, how dare you besmirch the name of William Shakespeare. And I like that Mescal approaches the role not with this like, I'm playing one of the most important humans.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a guy. And. Yeah. And I just felt like he played him with just the soul of like any artist, just a person who, you know, has this drive to create and to write. And I don't know. I had an interesting experience watching this film because, you know, when you're watching a movie that you're really emotionally invested in, but you can tell the person next to you is not as emotionally invested as you are. And then you feel weird for like, you know, cause you're like, am I wrong? Or you feel like self-conscious. I could tell that Olivia was like I cried several times in the movie I could tell that she was just like not having the same experience. So I asked her about that afterward. I was like, well, what, like, did you find, and she goes, I don't know. She's like, I just didn't really like connect with, I just related to Jesse Buckley's anger at him because she's mad at him. He misses a lot as people know, they lived in Stratford-on-Avon. They lived, which is, you know, quite a ways away from London, but Shakespeare worked in London. One of the only places that you could go to be a successful playwright or person, you know, a thespian, a theater artist was London, but they didn't want to raise their kids in London because at the time it was a really hard place to, you know, the mortality rate for children went up significantly. It was already high, and it goes up significantly like in a place that's like the hub of the plague, you know, it just overcrowded, and their kids had a much better chance of being safe in the country. But that meant that to commute, and he had to have two places where he lived. He had to have, you know, and he had to spend significant amounts of time away from his family. And Olivia's take was, she was just kind of like, I agree with Jesse Buckley. Like, he should have been there. He should be with his family. And to me, it's like the modern equivalent of being married to like a SoundCloud rapper. That's just like, but my band, babe, like I gotta be with like my music career. Yeah. And it's like, and I just was kind of like, I get that. I get how like a woman could look at that and just go like, hey, if you're going to be a dad, that should be your priority.
Right.
But I also look at it and go, at the time, no matter what profession you were choosing as a man to take care of your family, there was a likelihood that work would take you. It just was the nature of the world that, like, you know, let's say that, you know, like, I just watched the movie Train Dreams on Netflix, and that's a movie about a guy who is a logger, and the way he supports his family is he has to go into the woods for months at a time and cut down timber. And like, it means that he was a frontiersman, you know, in the early American West. And there was a long time in human history where, like, people didn't have the luxury necessarily of being able to have their job be located where their family is. And even now, when people have a job that has them traveling, they're usually traveling by plane, and like, they fly out to wherever they need to do work, and they're gone for like maybe 2 days, and they come home.
Yeah.
And, but it still exists. It's like, I'm still in a profession as an actor where, I have a lot of friends who have families, who have kids, who, like, they've often got to leave for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks at a time to go film a movie, or 6 weeks at a time to go do a play. And it's just part of the nature of, like, I don't look at it and go, like, everyone that I know who's a professional actor who has to be away from their family for a few months at a time for work, I don't look at them as like deadbeats you know, I just think it's like, I just think it's the nature of the job. And I do think that, like, what's being expressed there in the story is, like, this is a character, because initially Anya supports it. She's like,
she does. Yeah.
He needs to go to London.
She's the one who tells him, right? Like, you gotta go. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she winds up resenting it because he misses out on a lot. And, and that's a tough thing. And I think that what we're ultimately seeing is a story of how, when something terrible like this happens in a family unit, the parents can grieve in very different ways and be on different pages with their, and that's what's happening. But he sort of writes this play, at least in this story, he writes it as a way of trying to communicate to her, like, I'm feeling the same things you're feeling. I'm going through, you know, and I just liked how human Paul Mescal's performance was.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that. I think I like that the most, as far as, because I agree with you, like, if you're portraying Shakespeare, you might portray him as very eloquent and very wordy, and, you know, like, he's so smart and just comes out of his, you know, it just happens. His art just happened. But Paul Mescal portrays him as someone who doubts himself, right? And I find that so much more realistic. Like, everything that an artist does, there are very few artists who never doubt what they're doing, like, who it flows out of them. Like, they'll write, they'll rewrite, they'll critique themselves. They'll kind of feel like, be so insecure. Like, I think you as an artist and me as an artist feel that way. And I loved that they had him, you know, kind of like, you never hear what he's writing, really. Like, he's just working on it. And he's like, you can tell that he's struggling with it. And I really loved that they did that, because it made him so much more relatable. And it just made him more human to relate with the other characters. Like, when he does have to go, like, exactly what you're saying, like, we all grieve in different ways. And for this movie, the way that he grieved was to write, you know, and he had to get back to London to actually grieve. So I see that, but also I love, because I think she is so, Agnes is really mad at William when he goes back to London. But then when she does see the play, when she sees Hamlet, it's almost like her, oh, this is what you were doing. Like, this is how you were grieving, right? So the end is so wrapped up so well, just by looks of, you know, just like, okay, this is how you were able to handle this. And I thought it was great. Like, I understand why people would be mad at him for leaving, but you never know. That's just kind of how things were.
Yeah, and let's talk about this ending really quick before we get into our scores, because I do think that this is, I mean, it's just an enormously beautiful sequence, and it really, it's, I think that they do a really good job structurally here of making the emotional climax of the film the ending and not overstaying the welcome and just letting it be that.
Yes.
but you know, and you see this in the trailer.
Yeah.
What happens is, you know, as they're grieving in their different ways, and as William is not really there, and Agnes feels increasingly, and she, it's just like we see that like a year has gone by, and
yeah,
she's completely despondent, and it's just like she's not ever going to get over the loss of her son. Mm-hmm. And she finds out through someone else, not even through Will, that he's written this play, The Tragedy of Hamlet. And she goes to London out of curiosity, almost to see, like almost half angry. Like,
yeah,
if
yeah,
you've written angry. A play about my son and it's not, and it, like, if you like, first of all, like, I don't even know if I like the idea that you're sharing this with other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And second, you know, so she and her brother, for the first time, it seems, go to the Globe Theater to actually watch one of his plays. And it's also the first time in the movie that we hear his name out loud. They don't say the name William Shakespeare the entire film.
I didn't even notice that. That's great.
They don't even say Will. They don't even say his name the entire movie. Yeah. And then this little boy pokes his head out the window and goes, like, who are you looking for? And they go, William Shakespeare. And it's the first time in the film that his name is said out loud. And, you know, they wind up going to see this play. And I really liked, I mean, this is the shirt I wore for this episode. It's
nice.
This is Salt Lake Acting Company. It's a theater that I spent a lot of time at in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I acted in like 17 shows there in my 20s. And then I'm now a writer at that theater. I write their summer show every year with a couple other writers. And, you know, like I am a lifelong thespian. I am a lifelong theater artist. Yeah. And I mean, it was really cool to see this experience of like her getting to see a show in the Globe Theater with these actors. And initially when she first starts hearing people say Hamlet and they're not talking about, it doesn't seem like they're like the beginning of the opening of the play Hamlet is like these guards talking about how they saw a ghost and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she's like upset. She's like, what does any of this have to do with my son?
Yeah.
Get my son's name out of your mouth. And she starts pushing through the crowd to be like, don't talk about my son, and to yell at the actors, which also like, this was also like sort of a thing in Shakespeare's time, is people would talk back and forth they would yell at the stage. They, you know, like everyone's seen the thing of like people throwing cabbages or throwing tomatoes, you know, this like before movies existed, before TV existed, seeing a live show was a totally different experience, but it was like one that like was kind of unparalleled. Like it was the height of what storytelling could be. But yeah, it's like once she sees Noah Jupe come out on stage with his colored blonde hair, they've like sort of artificially colored his hair blonde.
Yep.
The whole play changes for her. And she has this like transcendent spiritual experience where she gets to see her boy alive again on stage. And, and Will just sort of watches from the wings and watches her experience with this.
Well, and he comes out because he's the father. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this whole conversation and once she changes, cause you could tell she's angry, and then she just like stops, which again, she's not holding your hand. Chloe Zhao isn't holding your hand through this sequence. It all plays out on Jesse Buckley's face, mm-hmm. which is what is so amazing, because you can tell when she's angry, then you can tell when she starts to realize what all of this means and kind of what it means for her and what it means for William and what it means for their family. And she just all of a sudden just becomes enthralled in this play, like the mm-hmm. whole time. And then, you know, Shakespeare is playing the father. He's playing Hamlet's ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a thing, and then she's like, look at me, right? She says in the crowd, look at me. And he turns around and he looks at her, and that exchange as well, just like, it was also just amazing, because after that, I think William goes in the back, and that's when he has his breakdown, because she starts to understand this is how you're dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes and he has his moment in the back where he just starts crying, mm-hmm. which was awesome. But then he's able to go back and he sees the end of the play. He's watching her. He's watching Agnes watching the play. And so I did a one or funner on this, but apparently they didn't know how to end this movie the last week of filming. Mm. So they filmed this last, and they filmed the first day, and it just did how it was scripted, and it just didn't work. And Chloe Zhao was like, crap, we don't have a movie. Like, And Jesse Buckley too was like, this isn't working. And then Jesse Buckley sent Chloe Zhao a song from the the composer
Henry. And,
yeah,
what is, I can't remember. I should know his name. Because I associate, I love this piece of music.
Yeah.
I always thought this was just the original score to the movie Arrival, because that's where I know. It from.
Yeah.
And so when it first started playing, I was like, are you allowed to do that? Like,
yeah,
Tim Robinson style. Like, I don't think they're allowed to do that.
Yeah,
you know, because like, right. I just was like, this is this.
Yeah.
But then I looked it up and it's like, oh no, this is the composer. Who I think is like Henry Miller,
Max Richter.
Max Richter. I'm totally wrong.
No, you're
Max
good.
Richter.
Composed
this piece separately, independently of either film, and I guess just was willing to just use it for
Jesse Buckley heard, it's called This Bitter Earth, which is Max Richter's song on The Nature of Daylight, which he wrote I think just as a standalone piece, and it's been used in like dozens of movies because it is very it's very effective, right?
And I associate it with Arrival.
Arrival is probably the most famous recently for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and then This Bitter Earth is just Dina Washington's lyrics from another song. Anyway, so Chloe Zhao was in her car, and then she realized, like, oh, this needs to be, it needs to be about touch, right? She needs to be letting go. So she came up with it. So there's 4 days left of filming, and they figured it out, which is insane to me, which I think is awesome. But
what's interesting to me, though, in that moment, though, is that. In Chloe's, it's about touch and about letting go.
Yeah.
They're really focused on the act, on the story, on like, what does Agnes need in order to move on, what I see in the macro is like a moment where with Netflix acquiring Warner Brothers and with that, feels like there's like this assault on the live experience, on the communal experience of, because what I experienced in my theater, even though my girlfriend was next to me, not crying as heavily as I was crying, I could hear the chorus of sniffles and cries. And I'm having this communal experience with the audience around me.
Yes.
And what happens is Jesse Buckley as the grieving mother. So Hamlet's dying. Everybody dies at the end of Hamlet. Spoiler alert. Everybody dies famously.
Yeah.
And Hamlet gives this speech about how he's dying, because that's what people do in Shakespeare plays. They don't just die. They have to give a big, but as he's doing it, Agnes reaches out to him.
Yeah.
And he takes her hand. But when she does that, the rest of the audience goes, us too.
Yeah.
And they all reach out. And so you've got like several hundred people reaching out. And I'm sitting there in a movie theater going, 400 years later, we're still doing this. Like, collectively, we all sit and watch a story.
Yeah.
And in the moment of the emotional climax, we're all together crying and sniffing.
Yeah.
And collectively, like, spiritually holding each other's hands through this moment. Yeah. And I just was like, I don't know. I doubt that this was part of the conversation for Chloe Zhao and her. I think it was more likely what you're talking about, that they wanted an emotional resolution for the characters and for the story. But there is this macro narrative or this meta narrative of like, this is what we lose if we give up the community experience.
Experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm sure that was not on their mind when they were making it, but that is something like, and when I was watching this movie, that was in my mind. Like, mm-hmm. I could not get this community experience anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I went alone, and I was sitting, you know, with a bunch of different people who I don't know, and we're all crying, you know, and I hear the sniffles too. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad everybody else is crying when I'm crying.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Cause there were three or four or five times when I was just crying, like, wow, just because of the way that it was performed. But you don't get that. Like, you get that shared experience in a theater. And I love that in this movie, the ending is just her touching him and then everybody else doing the same. They've all been emotionally affected by this. And that's something you can't get anywhere else. Right.
Well, like, and I like how Noah Jupe is also caught off guard.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that. Yeah.
And these moments happen. Like you talked about, like with your parents that are like this, as an actor.
Yeah.
These moments happen where you realize that the audience is with you.
Yeah.
Like that you're like having an experience and then you hear someone in the audience like gasp at something that you just said, and you're like, okay, we're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. And like I did this play one time where it was a one man show and I played 16 characters. It's a it's a play about a man who's being excommunicated from the LDS church because he married another man, and he's at a disciplinary council where there's 15 stake in the stake presidency and then 12 council members, and he plays all of them, and they're all these men that he grew up going to church with, and the whole play you're kind of wondering like, why is this guy, why did he even bother showing up? Like, so I play like the guy that's getting excommunicated than everybody else. But the audience is like, in the back of your mind, it's like, why are you even there? Like, why are you, why'd you even show up for this? Like, if you know they're just it doesn't seem like you care about going to church anyway, but he goes kind of one by one through all of these characters that are there. And then he gets to the stake president and he tells the audience, he says, you know, this is the reason why I'm here is for him. Right. And he goes, because the stake president is my dad. And he goes, and he was at my wedding and he danced with me at my wedding. And I wanted to be here for him through this.
Oh, wow.
And as I was saying that one night, I had completely forgotten that this was the night that my parents came. And I am looking at the audience because I'm narrating this thing. And I look up directly into the audience at my dad who's crying. And I go like, and that's my dad.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and I'm looking right at my dad and, you know, and I'm like, we're having this experience. And every single night when I would do this, I could hear the audience crying as I'm crying.
Right.
And we're like having this connection of being like, I'm here for him because he was there for me. And it's just like, that stuff is like, it's just really powerful.
Oh, you know? Yeah. It's intangible. You can never really, you can't. Yeah. And that's what you get with lots of art, right? You just, and especially shared art when you can have it, like it can be this amazing experience. And I think, you know, so she is able, Agnes is able to touch Noah Jupe and everybody else touches him. And they're at a play in a shared experience, which William Shakespeare is doing, right? So they both kind of get this, they get their process out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and they never say anything to each other. William is just looking at Agnes and she just looks back at him. But you can tell like, okay, things aren't perfect, but they're going to, you know, they're going to work through this or whatever.
Yep.
And then it just ends with Agnes is just kind of laughing, like smiling that, but they do show.
They show Hamnet.
They show Hamnet because he's kind of in this, like, he's almost like through this veil and he's like, he's on stage and he doesn't know what to do. And he's like lost and he's crying for his mommy, which I was just like, oh my gosh, like that. Yeah. It was so hard. But then they switch back to him and he goes through the door, right? Mm-hmm. Through the door on the stage, kind of almost like, do they both look at him? Do William and
it's like they're both look at him? I think so. And it's like they're all moving on. It's like everyone's going like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, not that you ever get over or lose the grief of a child, but it's, I mean, you know, and what I love is that the film just ends, that it doesn't have to, that it just goes like, we're going to take you to the emotional climax of the film. And then we're done.
Yeah.
And you know, so it was a really, really beautiful ending. And
an amazing ending for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. One of a very, very powerful, and one of the most powerful of the year for sure.
Oh yeah.
So that is Hamnet. Let's get into our scores. We give scores on this show out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a technical rating for how well the film was crafted, writing, acting, directing, cinematography, musical score, all that good stuff. We give a score for the ending, which we just talked about. We give a score for rewatchability, and we give a score for cultural significance and a score for our subjective feelings. So Kramer, what is your technical rating for Hamnet?
My technical rating is a 9, and maybe it should be a 9.5 because everybody's bringing their A game, like the production design, the editing, which Chloe Zhao helped edit this movie, which I'm always amazed at when directors can do that as well. Everything is just working kind of on all cylinders. I think just taking off, it didn't get a perfect score for me because of those little nitpicks that we talked about. I think some of them kind of glare a little bit, but just overall an amazingly well-made film overall.
Yeah, I gave it an 8.5, technically, for similar reasons. I think this is an incredibly well-made film and incredibly effective in the moments that it really counts. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I dock an extra point for some of the nitpicks that we talked about, specifically because since this movie has such an emotional punch to pack, I think that that punch could even hit harder with some well-used restraint earlier on. Mm-hmm. I think that the fact that the film is so emotional throughout could potentially wind up lessening the impact of that amazing ending. And sometimes it's like sometimes I'll work with actors who have access to their, like they can cry anytime they want. Right. Yeah. And it's like, that's amazing that you have that you can like access that, those tears anytime you want. I think what's really going to be effective for an audience is if you can pick the right moments to let that out. When do you use restraint? When do you hold it in? And when do you let it all out? And this film feels like it's letting it all out a lot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the moments really, really work for me, but I just wonder like maybe what would happen if you could use a little more restraint so that some like, and pick like two or three big moments where it's all going to come out. You know, and the movie almost does that, but I think that because of the way Chloe Zhao does it, where she's sort of just letting the actors do, you know, feel their way through things. Mm-hmm. It's missing a little bit of that restraint for me. Yeah. How about the ending for you?
The ending I gave a 10 just because it's so well done without holding your hand, as I've been saying the whole time. And also just the resolution is so satisfying. Like, at least for me, I was just like, wow, like it all works somehow and it works perfectly for me.
I gave it a 10 as well for the exact same reasons. An ending that is all done with imagery. Everything about the ending that is impactful is imagery in a story about a writer whose work was all about the words. It was words, 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 words. Yeah. And this movie is just raw emotion. And the ending is all imagery. And it was just, I mean, it's just like about as good of an ending as you could hope for from this film. So, yeah. How about rewatchability?
Okay, rewatchability. This is going to be a lot. I gave it a 5 because it's a very emotionally impacting movie. And I enjoyed watching this movie. I don't think I will enjoy continuing to watch it just because it's so heavy, right? So this isn't a bad score. It's just that like I don't want to keep going back to it because it's so sad.
I gave it a 6 on rewatchability and it's for some very similar reasons. There are movies that make me cry that I can rewatch over and over and over again. I Past Lives is one of my favorite movies from the last 5 years. Mm. And I've seen that movie several times and I really enjoy watching it. And I cry at the end every single time. You know, there's certain movies that like, I know I'm going to cry when I watch it, but I really enjoy the process of watching it. Yeah. And I think this really illustrates sort of the nitpick that we were getting at with like some of the overindulgence of the emotion throughout, because it does make the viewing experience of the film so heavy to the point that it's hard to be like, well, I'm excited to go back to that because it's just so heavy throughout versus if you just have those few moments, because like Past Lives, I cry every single time, but not throughout the entire, the rest of the movie is a really like pleasant watch. Mm-hmm. And then there's just this moment at the end that gets me every single time. Mm-hmm. And it's like picking that moment. Whereas if this movie could have found some way to make the rewatch experience lovely throughout and this kind of like really beautiful thing where there's a lot of things to rediscover. And then that end gets you every time.
Then
I'd probably have a much higher rewatch score.
Yeah.
But as it is, it's like, it's just sort of like a heavy movie beginning, middle and end.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know that I'm going to be clamoring to come back to it.
Exactly.
How about cultural impact?
Cultural impact, I'm giving an 8, and maybe it could be more. I think this is going to be a film that people go back to a lot, or at least discover. I think I'm docking at some points because of the rewatchability-ness of it. But I think it could win Best Picture. I think it will, people will watch it, and it'll be a great lesson on visual storytelling. And mm-hmm. I think it's also a great lesson on emotional storytelling. So I think this will have a big impact down the line for sure.
I gave it a 6, and you might be right. I don't know. I just was kind of like, I don't, you know, I think you're right that it probably will win several awards. It mm-hmm. definitely has a shot to take the, you know, the biggest right, ones, director, right. Best picture, mm-hmm. actor for Buckley, actress for Buckley. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to because of the rewatchability thing that we talked about, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to like stay.
Yeah.
But I could be totally wrong. So that's my, you know,
right.
That's we'll my see. Feeling right now. I could be totally wrong. How about your subjective score?
My subjective score is a 9. It just, I think the ending really pulls it up for me. I really think this is really well made and it packs the punch that it wanted to. And I think the way, like we talked about, the way that it kind of shows their emotions, but also kind of the realities of, like, you know, the motherly instinct or whatever you want to call it. I thought it was great. So I really enjoyed this movie for those reasons.
My subjective score is an 8. Really, really enjoyed this movie. I think that the stuff that makes it a movie that I'm not anxious to rewatch, that I'm not like, mm-hmm. like I yep. can't wait till yep. I get to see that again. That yep. stuff makes me go, man, you know, I like, this is a movie yep. that has so many themes that I care about. Themes yeah. about the importance of live storytelling, like themes about like theater and the experience of communal, you know, view, like, all, yeah, yeah. like I think that this could be a film that I would go, oh, I'm going to watch this for the rest of my life. And, but because of some of that stuff, I just go, I feel like a lot of this film is just people sort of looking at each other and making faces. And yeah. you're right that yeah. it's a great example of visual storytelling, but I do like well, really well-written dialogue. Like the movies yes. that I come back yes. to over and over and over again are movies with like really special scenes with really yeah. great exchanges. And this movie, most of the special moments are just like in looks and, yeah. you yeah. know, and yeah. which I applaud the movie for, but for me subjectively,
yeah,
it's like, I'm more likely to come back to The Social Network yeah. For like, you know, like something like that.
Yeah.
Or again, Past Lives has a lot of exchanges that I, or like the Before trilogy from Richard Linklater. Mm-hmm. It's all about mm-hmm. the writing. It's all about the dialogue. Yeah. Then I am to come back to something like this. So,
yeah,
but I still really, really like the movie and think yeah. that it, yeah, it deserves yeah. all the hype and all of the love that it's getting.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the film out there? Let us know in the comments. Did you cry like a baby, or were you more like Olivia thinking, I don't care about this guy and his stupid band? Let us know. Yeah. Up next, we are watching Avatar, Fire and Ash. So maybe you got to do a rewatch of the first two before you get to this next episode.
Or you
maybe
don't.
Yeah, you probably don't. I have a feeling it's just going to be more of the same. But if you want to watch along with the show, that's what we'll be watching and talking about next. So like, share, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we will see you on the next one.
Bye-bye.